Good morning. This is your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster, Cicely Tiernan, with today, April 14th, Wall Street Journal. Canadians are cashing out their American vacation homes. Political uncertainty coupled with a weak Canadian dollar is driving owners to sell properties they've had for decades, by Nancy Keats. Natalia Mancuso, a Canadian elementary school teacher, had planned on keeping her Pompano Beach, Florida vacation condo for a lot longer than 6 years. But starting in January, Mancuso said she began feeling increasingly uncomfortable. The 56-year-old, who lives and works near Montreal, says she and her husband treasured the weeks they were able to spend in Florida in the winter, even though rising homeowners association fees and the falling Canadian dollar had made it more expensive in the past year. Then the Trump administration announced new tariffs on Canada that made her worry the U.S. government may penalize Canadians who own property in the U.S. The president's repeated references to Canada as the 51st state were the last straw, she says. In March, Mancuso sold her two-bedroom, two-bathroom condo for $235,000, at $100,000 more than she paid for the 1,100-square-foot unit in 2019. It was a good deal, she said, even with the $40,000 she spent on renovations. The final decision was based on the political situation, Mancuso said. We were scared of what might happen. Many Canadians are giving up on their U.S. vacation homes, selling properties they've owned for decades in popular snowbird spots like Florida and Arizona, according to local real estate agents. One factor is economics. The Canadian dollar in recent months had weakened against the U.S. dollar, earlier this year hitting its lowest level in 22 years, making it more expensive for Canadians to pay HOA fees, insurance, and property taxes in the U.S. On the flip side, selling their homes in U.S. dollars was more of a boon, especially since property values and popular winter escapes have risen significantly. While the broader economic arguments for selling have been compelling for months, what's pushing many over the edge now is politics, real estate agents say. President Trump implemented historic tariffs on 25% on some goods from Canada and has frequently alluded to annexing Canada. Brokers say their clients talk about feeling increasingly unwelcome and worry that the government may increase taxes on properties owned by Canadians. Other measures, such as the new rule requiring foreign nationals who stay in America for more than 30 days to register with the government, have made them feel nervous about future travel restrictions, agents say. The key word is uncertainty, says Catherine Spino with Lionsgate Realty in Boca Raton, Florida, where she has been a real estate agent for 9 years. Since January, she has seen twice as many Canadian clients list their homes compared with the usual amount this time of year, and a sharp decline in Canadians looking to buy homes in the area. On April 2nd, Spino received an email from a Canadian citizen who she was helping look for a second home in South Florida in the $1 million range. He wrote, "I was seriously looking to buy a condo, but now he's treating our beloved country Canada. I have decided to abandon the plans for now. Why would I spend my money here?" It's a big shift after Canadians have long made up the largest share of foreign residential real estate buyers in the U.S. They accounted for an average of 23% of foreign purchases from 2010 to 2013, and were still the largest segment of 13% last year, according to the National Association of Realtors. David Altro, a lawyer at Altro LLP, a firm with offices in Canada and the U.S. that assists with cross-border real estate finance, says in 40 years of practicing, he has never seen so much interest from Canadians who want to sell their U.S. homes. The firm typically got calls from about two Canadian clients a week who had either sold or were selling in the U.S. For the past couple of months, that has surged to about 20 to 30 a week, he says. The political situation was the tipping point for Gary Laborian, a 76-year-old Canadian who owns a real estate firm in Cobourg, Ontario. He put his 5-bedroom, 3,300-square-foot house with a pool and a big backyard southeast of Phoenix on the market for $599,000 in March. LeBaron and his wife bought the vacation house for around $155,000 in 2011 and spent much of the winter there over the years. The weakening exchange rate had been weighing on his mind, but he had no plans to leave until the tariffs, which sped up his decision to sell by almost 2 years. He says, a 25% import tariff on goods from Mexico and Canada took effect March 4th with an exception for energy products and potash. The tariffs have pushed Canada to the brink of recession. We want to be here, but we've decided we are not going to be here, LeBaron said. He knows it's unlikely, but in the back of his mind, he worries the U.S. government may go so far as to nationalize Canadian-owned properties. It's getting scary, he says. Who knows what they'll do? In the greater Phoenix area, there has been a dramatic increase in Canadians selling their properties, says Miles Zimbullock, a real estate agent with HomeSmart in Scottsdale, Arizona. Such listings climbed to about 700 in January through March, up from around 100 at the same time last year, according to Zimbalik's review of tax records. He says he has also seen a 40% decline in the number of Canadians buying properties in Arizona during that period. The sell-off is partly due to the exchange rate, says Zimbalik, but the president's musings on annexation and dramatic shift in tariff policy have pushed people who were thinking of selling into action. In March, Trump told reporters in the Oval Office that Canada only works as a state. We don't need anything they have, he says. This would be the most incredible country visually. If you look at a map, they drew an artificial line right through it between Canada and the U.S. Talk like this is part of why Clifford and Paulette Larick left Arizona after more than a decade owning a second home in Chandler, about 22 miles southeast of Phoenix. They relished the winters they spent golfing, hiking, and dancing with friends after buying a 2-bedroom, 2-bathroom condo in 2010 for around $100,000. The complex had 3 pools, a clubhouse, and a lake. Clifford, a 67-year-old retired CPA, who describes himself as a right-leaning conservative, says political divisions with their neighbors escalated this year. People they'd known for a long time started telling them that the border between the U.S. and Canada wasn't where it should be, he said. It made it difficult to hang out at the pool. Paulette, 68, who also retired from a career in accounting, says she found herself getting really angry when people they knew joked about their country becoming a U.S. state. She was on the social committee at the condo complex, but found she didn't want to go to the Friday evening events anymore. The couple listed their 1,000-square-foot condo for $350,000 in February, sold it in a week, and drove back to their home in Calgary, Alberta. Crossing the border was a huge relief, said Paulette. On the other side of the border, Canada has cracked down on foreign home buyers, including Americans, in recent years. Non-Canadians have been banned from buying residential real estate there since 2023, except in areas that aren't as heavily populated, in an effort to help reduce rising housing costs. The country has also adopted an underused housing tax to target foreign-owned homes that sit vacant for large portions of the year. The rising taxes drove Americans Mark Davarin and Kelly McDermott, financial investors who live in Portland, Oregon, to sell the 3-bedroom, 2,045-square-foot townhouse they bought as a vacation property in Squamish, British Columbia in 2019. The whole situation made us feel unwanted and unappreciated, said Davarin. I can't even imagine how uncomfortable it would be to spend time in Canada while dealing with the 51st state blowback. In Arizona, Canadians own almost 20,000 residential properties, accounting for more than 90% of the properties owned by foreigners in the state, according to an analysis of tax data by Zimbalik, the agent with HomeSmart. Canadians make up 17% of the number of residential purchases by foreigners in Florida in 2024, the most of any foreign buyers, according to Florida Realtors, a trade association. An incident at a Walmart cemented Philippe Trudeau's decision to sell his condo there in March and stop spending his winters in the U.S. The 50-year-old business owner from Montreal was speaking French when a stranger asked him, "What are you doing here?" When he explained he owned a home in Pompano Beach, Florida since 2018, the man didn't back off, Trudeau said. "He told me, 'Go back home,' says Trudeau. He said, 'We don't need you here.'" After one day on the market, his two-bedroom, two-bathroom, 1,200-square-foot condo sold for $280,000. "I just wanted to get out of here," he says. New U.S. investment-grade credit supply declines amid increased market volatility. The issuance of new U.S. investment-grade credit dropped in the last week to $9.5 billion, below already subdued expectations for $10 billion to $15 billion in deal, credit sites analysts say in a note. Primary markets remain in a holding pattern as volatility persisted and markets reacted to a deluge of trade-related headlines. Low-rated investment-grade bond supply dominated the new issuance, with BBBs pricing $5.5 billion, while single A's priced $2.5 billion, credit site says. Despite market volatility, demand for the new limit investment-grade supply was strong, the analysts say. Order books were 5 times covered. Italian bonds outperformed Bund at market open after S&P upgrade. Italian government bonds, or BTPs, outperformed German bonds at market open after S&P Global Ratings upgraded Italy's credit rating to BBB+ from BBB with stable outlook on Friday. The upgrade reflects Italy's improved economic, external, and monetary buffers amid rising global headwinds, the ratings agency said. It also reflects the gradual progress Italy has made in stabilizing public finances since the pandemic's onset, the ratings firm said. The 10-year BTP yield falls 3.5 basis points to 3.768%, while the 10-year Bund yield is up 4.5 basis points to 2.579%, according to TradeWeb data. Streetwise, will the last investor to leave America please turn out the lights? The damage from Trump's trade war is far greater than the losses in stocks, bonds, and the dollar seen so far, by James McIntosh. When market veterans gather, the talk often turns to memorable crashes. Where were they in 2020, 2011, 2008, 1998, or for the older among them, 1987? Last week should join the list. Where were you when investors fled America? The week was full of thrills that would be more fun to look back on than they were for those trying to trade them. Stocks had been among their biggest ever two-day drops and one of their largest one-day rises, whipsawing investors. Meanwhile, the dollar plunged and treasuries flashed warning signs of deeper trouble. But what really stood out was the combination of moves, the flight from American assets in general. Stocks, bonds, and the dollar all sold off at once. There was a lot more going on than just day traders buying and selling on Truth Social posts. Investors who want to plan for the future need to take a view on three distinct drivers of what happened: trade, debt, and de-Americanization. Protection racket. What worked since Trump's tariff? Dump dollars. Trade, or rather President Trump's attack on it, provided the basic reason to sell. His delay of the bizarrely calculated additional tariffs on countries other than China offered midweek relief, and Friday night's exemption for iPhones and other electronics will offer further respite. But investors quickly went back to working out the damage from the tit-for-tat trade war across the Pacific. That is in addition to his baseline tariff of 10%, even on countries with which the U.S. runs a trade surplus. Stocks naturally fell as Wall Street strategists upped their probability of recession. The S&P 500 ended the week higher than it started, but remains well down from the tariff announcement the previous week. Notably, the dollar and treasuries continued selling off even as stocks rebounded. The Federal Reserve may be less willing to cut than it usually is in a downturn because of the inflationary effects of tariffs. By the end of the week, futures priced in fewer rate cuts this year than at the start, despite a slower-than-expected inflation report. A more hawkish Fed might justify higher bond yields, helping explain some of the rise in the 10-year yield and fall in prices. Debt yield its head early in the week as hedge funds began to liquidate trades deep in the plumbing of the financial system. The unwinding of leverage positions drove big swings. In an unusually benign corner of interest rates, known as swap spreads, this led to heavy selling of treasuries that drove up yields and threatened to force more selling. The prospect of self-fulfilling spiral of selling put investors and regulators on edge as a 2020-style panic in the bond market suddenly appeared possible. Trump reversed course in time to prevent the worst. Crash, bang, wallop. S&P 500 changed since April 2nd. But investors are again aware of the danger of a near-trillion-dollar hedge fund unwind. That in itself is a reason to reduce treasury exposure, at least until hedge fund positions are cleaned out. De-Americanization kicked in as investors watched the chaotic policymaking from the White House, but it wasn't only about the U.S. losing its aura of economic competence. Far from strengthening as bond yields rose, the dollar has fallen sharply. On Friday, it reached its weakest level since 2022. Europe and China are expected to stimulate their economies, which will help offset tariff damage. But the U.S.'s giant tariffs amount to a large tax on consumers, slowing growth even before the hit lands from uncertainty about what happens next. A relatively weak U.S. economy should mean a weaker dollar. Worries about the independence of the Fed have arisen as the administration asserts its right to fire the heads of independent agencies, an issue that is likely to head to the Supreme Court. A win for the White House would probably give it the power to fire Fed governors. This would call into question their willingness to make politically unpopular decisions. Owned. Foreigners own far more U.S. assets than Americans own foreign assets. U.S. net international investment position. On top of that, investors were all in on the idea that the U.S. was exceptionally strong. So there is a lot of foreign money to come out of U.S. assets. U.S. assets are losing some of their safe haven status, said Jack McIntyre, a bond fund manager at Brandywine Global. It's another way of saying that U.S. exceptionalism has peaked. Some big foreign investors now want a premium to buy U.S. assets because of the risk of the U.S. confiscating capital in some way. The tariff gambit will fail to achieve its goals, and they may have to revert to modifying capital, said one large Canadian investor, saying once unimaginable taxes on foreign capital flows or repatriation of investment now had to be considered. Stephen Moran, chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors, has in the past suggested Mar-a-Lago Accord that could charge for foreign reserves held in treasuries. This would amount to a default. On Monday, he instead proposed that allies could avoid retaliating on tariffs or simply cut a check to the U.S. to pay for the American military and the dollar's reserve status. That is unlikely to be popular in countries like France. They correctly think the greenback's special status gives the U.S. an unfair advantage through cheap borrowing, the opposite of Miron's view. It's hard to unpick how much damage each of these three issues did to markets. I think most of the moves of the past week were due to the tariff shock to the economy, combined with the unwind of massive hedge fund leverage positions and a starting position of too much foreign money and dollars. But the fall in the dollar is at least in part about a loss of faith in America. If that carries on, U.S. markets have a long way to fall as foreigners flee. Policy. U.S. allies Allies are sitting out Trump's trade war with China. Imposition of new tariffs on nearly every country adds to concerns in Europe and Asia about relying on America. By Yaroslav Tremonov. America needs its allies and partners for what is shaping up as a protracted contest for geopolitical primacy. Now that President Trump has unleashed a trade war against China, they are in no rush to take sides. Some 70 countries currently negotiating tariff relief with the U.S. should approach China as a group together with Washington, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said last week. Other U.S. officials suggested joint efforts to starve China of modern technologies and trade opportunities. The problem is many European and Asian partners aren't sure to what extent they are still allied with Washington. Trump's initial Liberation Day order, after all, slapped them with sky-high tariffs that made no distinction between long-term adversaries and faithful allies. The shock from this attack, partially reversed only as a result of a U.S. market rout, with additional exceptions quietly adopted on Friday, has added to months of concerns about how much Trump's America can be relied upon in an increasingly brutal world. That is especially so now that Trump has linked trade concessions to security cooperation. Trump had outraged European leaders even before the new tariffs, with his embrace of Russia and arm-twisting of Ukraine, his claims on Greenland and Canada, and his description of the European Union as an organization designed to screw us. Even after the partial suspension, these tariffs on the EU amount to $59 billion a year, said French President Emmanuel Macron. This is just below the $66.5 billion in U.S. military assistance to Ukraine over more than 3 years of war. Friends and allies and foes are being treated the same with no respect, and everything has become a zero-sum game, says Jep Kofod, a former foreign minister of Denmark, which is refusing Trump's demand to surrender Greenland. It's crazy time. Instead of hewing closer to Washington's line, voices are growing in Europe for a reversal of the EU's China policy, which has increasingly aligned itself with American moves to deny China modern technologies and investment opportunities. Ursula von der Leyen, president of the European Commission, spoke with Chinese Premier Li Qiang shortly after Trump's tariffs were imposed, and an EU-China summit is being planned for July. Meanwhile, the EU and China last week agreed to restart talks to settle a dispute over Chinese electrical vehicle imports, which the bloc hit with tariffs a few months ago. Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez, ahead of his visit to Beijing on Friday, called for Europe to review its relationship with China as it adapts to the new reality. His statement provoked a rebuke from Bessent, who warned that cooperating with Beijing would be cutting your own throat. Chinese leader Xi Jinping had a different reaction as he welcomed Sanchez. Europe and China, he said, must jointly safeguard economic globalization and the international trade environment, and jointly resist unilateral bullying actions. While Europe hopes China could help blunt an expansionist Russia, Asia-Pacific partners, including Japan, South Korea, and Australia, worry first about Beijing's intentions to dominate the region. Dependent on America for their security, these countries are also more reluctant to openly criticize the Trump administration. But they, too, are adjusting to a situation where American friendship can no longer be taken for granted. Now is exactly the worst time to be a U.S. ally, because Trump and his people think that the allies have been ripping them off for more than the adversaries, said Thintian Pongsudhiriak, a professor of international relations at Chulalongkorn University in Bangkok. The U.S. will get away with this in the short term, countries will have to concede, but in the medium and longer term, it's alienating itself from its partner countries. Trump is giving China a golden opportunity. She is visiting three Southeast Asian trading partners this week, arriving Monday in Vietnam, a country that has been closely cooperating with the U.S., but nevertheless was slapped by Trump with one of its highest tariffs. Even for countries such as Australia, so close to the U.S. culturally and politically, the bond is becoming more transactional. The relationship between America and its allies has been disrupted by America, said Australia's former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull, who led his country during Trump's first term. But while we may not share values in the way we did because of Mr. Trump's stated change, we will continue to share interests, so it's too early to call an end to the American alliance system. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt dismissed concerns that Trump is alienating American allies. They need the United States of America and our business model and our markets to survive, and the president is using that leverage to our advantage, she said. Government officials in Asia and beyond fear that the new U.S.-China trade war has the potential to escalate and make a direct military confrontation between the two superpowers more likely. With the China-U.S. competition, the economic links have been a stabilizer in an increasingly fraught relationship, said Robert Ward, Japan chair at the International Institute for Strategic Studies. There was an understanding that these two countries had a symbiotic relationship. That is now upended. Not everyone is convinced that the U.S., especially if it continues dismantling its own network of alliances, will ultimately gain the upper hand. By backing down on his initial tariffs, Trump has already shown that he is susceptible to market movements, and there will be more domestic pressure ahead of midterm elections next year, said Ettore Sequi, a former Italian ambassador to Beijing. Being an autocracy, China, however, can ask the Chinese to make sacrifices for a sufficiently long period of time, something that democracies can't, he said. There is an asymmetry of time here. Most countries today have China, not the U.S., as their biggest trade partner. The value of Australia's exports to the U.S., for example, is only 15% of its exports to China. That connecting tissue will be hard, if not impossible, to unravel to please a U.S. administration that changes its policies almost daily. The U.S. is building walls and China is building bridges, says Shen Shiwei, founder of the China Briefing newsletter and fellow at the Zhejiang Normal University. Trump has questioned the value of alliances such as the North Atlantic Treaty Organization and defense treaties in Asia. These allies, however, are crucial for the projection of American power, not just through offering their territory for bases, but also through cooperation on issues such as technology transfers that prevent China from gaining the military edge. Thousands of soldiers from Europe, Canada, and Australia were killed or maimed in America's wars in Afghanistan and Iraq in the past quarter century, and Washington's casual refusal to take that debt into account would inevitably contribute to allies' calculations on whether to join the U.S. in future conflicts. America is defecting from a system that has worked pretty well for everybody, and particularly well for U.S. allies, said Jeremy Shapiro, research director at the European Council on Foreign Relations and a former American diplomat. And I think that as a result, they can cease being U.S. allies. And that means that all the things that we were getting from them because they were part of the system, we won't get anymore. Unlike Washington, China isn't asking countries to choose their camp. No country is stupid. They are always hedging. The idea that countries have to pick sides between China and the U.S. is totally wrong. It will never happen, said retired People's Liberation Army Senior Colonel Zhou Bo, a senior fellow at Tsinghua University in Beijing. People nowadays are picking sides by issues, not by countries. You are listening to the Wall Street Journal on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I am your volunteer broadcaster, Cicely Tiernan. If you miss any part of this program, you can get it on demand on our website at sunsounds.org, then click on Broadcast Info and Audio. As we return to our article, European relations with China were poisoned over the past 3 years by Beijing's support for Russia, which wouldn't have been able to prosecute its war on Ukraine without Chinese diplomatic and economic backing. While that assistance continues on the diplomatic front, something unthinkable happened in recent months. Russia and the U.S. voted against a United Nations resolution on Ukraine, while China abstained and criticized Washington for excluding Europe from peace negotiations. As the post-World War II rules-based order morphs into empires with spheres of influence, Europe must balance against both Russia and America, and only China could provide that counterweight, said Bernard Guetta, a French member of the European Parliament. Even a full-blown political alliance between Europe and Beijing could emerge over time if the U.S. doesn't change its course, he said. A Chinese question exists now because the new U.S. administration not only hasn't made a single friendly gesture towards the EU, but has only made unpleasant and unsettling ones, said Guetta, a critic of the Chinese Communist Party. This doesn't mean that we suddenly have to praise the Chinese regime, but there are historical precedents. Roosevelt and Churchill once relied on Stalin, and that doesn't mean they converted to communism. Other European politicians are more cautious, saying the deterioration in China-European relations was primarily caused not by American pressure, but by Beijing's behavior, which isn't getting any better. Tensions with the U.S. doesn't mean that we must immediately lean on China, says Nicholas Tsipras, a German parliament member from CDU, the dominant party in the incoming government. The preferred solution should be to diversify trade with like-minded countries, such as Japan or Persian Gulf states, he said. This is going to be very tough, he conceded. China's exports surge as orders front-loaded before tariffs. Outbound shipments in March rose 12.4% compared with the same period a year earlier. China's exports surged in March as shipments were likely front-loaded before President Trump's Liberation Day tariffs, but they are expected to falter in the coming months. Outbound shipments rose 12.4% compared with the same period a year earlier, according to the official data released Monday. That was much stronger than the 2.3% increase in the first 2 months and the 4.4% growth tipped by a Wall Street Journal survey of economists. The jump in exports came before hefty tariffs announced by U.S. President Trump came into effect in April, and shipments are likely to slow sharply in the months ahead. U.S. tariffs on Chinese goods mean that it could take years before exports return to current levels, economists at Capital Economics said in a note. There are already signs of shipments being rerouted via third countries. Exports to Vietnam and Thailand accelerated markedly last month. China's imports fell 4.3% on year in March, better than the 8.4% decline in the January to February period, but weaker than the 1.8% rise expected by the survey of economists. That put China's trade surplus at $102.64 billion in March, bigger than the $77 billion projected by the survey. Exports in the first quarter rose 5.8% on year in dollar terms, while imports fell 7%. FAA says helicopter tour company in fatal Hudson crash will halt flights. Last week's accident that killed six people has renewed debate about non-essential helicopters around New York City, by Ginger Adams Edos. New York Helicopter, the tour operator behind the Hudson River crash that killed a Spanish family of five and a pilot, is shutting down, the Federal Aviation Administration said Sunday. The FAA said the company will stop operations immediately, and the FAA will conduct a review of New York Helicopter's license and safety record. The National Transportation Safety Board's probe into the cause of last week's crash will continue, the FAA said. Safety is the FAA's number one priority, and we will not hesitate to act to protect the flying public, the agency said on social media. Mike Roth, owner of the tour company, said he was unaware of the FAA announcement when reached by phone Sunday. I did not authorize that, he said. New York Helicopter operated the Bell 206 that crashed into the Hudson River on April 10, killing all six people on board. The aircraft was given a tour ride to Augustin Escobar Cañadas, 49 years old, and Merce Comprubi Montal, 39, who both work for Siemens, and their three young children. The family's visit to New York from Spain was timed to coincide with what would have been their daughter's 9th birthday. The pilot, Sean Johnson, 36, was the 6th victim. The aircraft plunged into the river on its way back to Lower Manhattan after a short trip up the Hudson to the George Washington Bridge. It landed in the water around Hoboken, New Jersey. The crash has renewed debate over helicopter trips over New York City, which includes sightseeing tours and commuter flights to local airports and nearby destinations such as the Hamptons. New York Senator Chuck Schumer, who has advocated for increased safety oversight of the helicopter tour industry, said the cessation of New York helicopter flights was good news. They were a danger to the public, but much work remains to be done, said Schumer, who has pushed for more inspections, among other things. A deadly 2018 helicopter crash in the East River that killed 5 people prompted the city to ban sightseeing tours out of the city that use helicopters without doors. That accident also led to new federal regulations related to the safety restraints used for open-door helicopter flights. Thursday's crash involved a helicopter with doors. Weaker dollar could lower inflation elsewhere. The dollar's depreciation on President Trump's tariff policies could lead to lower inflation for U.S. trading partners, Commerce Bank's Thanh Lu Nguyen said in a note. If this remains the case, most central banks will be spared a dilemma, weighing up economic and inflation risks, she said. That could allow for more interest rate cuts that would reduce the appreciation pressure of non-U.S. currencies against the dollar. For the time being, it seems highly unlikely that the effect of the tariffs will be reversed, she said. The DXY dollar index falls 0.9% to 99.2280 after hitting a 3-year low of 99.014 Friday. Dollar falls amid confusion over U.S. tariffs. The dollar stays lower after hitting a 3-year low Friday on building concern over the U.S. economic fallout of President Trump's tariff plans. Trump on Sunday said there would be no exemptions in tariffs after confusion over levies on electronics. The incoherence in U.S. economic policy, coupled with reduced credibility caused by Trump's constant U-turns, is clearly creating more than a few jitters, Pepperstone strategist Michael Brown said in a note. This has eroded a huge amount of trust in the U.S., he says. De-dollarization is now a real and frankly scary prospect. The DXY dollar index falls 0.7% to 94.4490 after hitting a low of 99.3510 Friday. Trump administration retreats from white-collar criminal enforcement. Justice Department backs away from some cases involving foreign bribery, money laundering, and crypto markets. Defense lawyers brace for slowdown. By Dave Michaels, Richard Vanford, and James Finelli. Gordon Coburn and Stephen Schwartz were on the verge of going to trial on charges of scheming to pay bribes in India when President Trump issued an executive order that put enforcement of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act on hold. It was a bolt of good luck for the former executives for Cognizant Technology Solutions, who had denied wrongdoing. The case had been dragging on for 6 years. Within 2 months, a new top prosecutor appointed by Trump dropped it. There was a tremendous sense of relief, said Lawrence Lustberg, a lawyer for Schwartz. The Trump administration is retreating from some types of white-collar law enforcement, including cases involving foreign bribery, public corruption, money laundering, and crypto markets. In some cases, the administration is effectively redefining what business conduct constitutes a crime. Trump's executive order in February said bribery prosecutions hurt the ability of American companies to compete overseas, punishing them for practices that are routine in some parts of the world. That pronouncement could upend dozens of cases and investigations. At the Justice Department, Attorney General Pam Bondi has ordered prosecutors to focus their anti-money laundering and sanctions evasion attention on drug cartels and international crime organizations. A few themes are emerging. Prosecuting executives for wrongdoing that doesn't have obvious victims is out. The Justice Department is open to arguments that a defendant has been targeted for political reasons, or that some prosecutions undermine economic competitiveness and national security interests. And political connections within Trump's world seem to matter. A Justice Department spokeswoman said fighting sophisticated crime remains a priority. White-collar enforcement focused on securing the integrity of U.S. markets and financial systems, tackling fraud, waste and abuse, and recouping victims' losses is our focus, she said. Some defense lawyers, encouraged by the shift, have urged prosecutors to drop cases or probes. Lawyers for Polymarket, the crypto-fueled online prediction market that forecasts Trump's November win, are seeking an end to an investigation that began last year, according to people familiar with the matter. Defense contractor Boeing has sought the Justice Department's consent to back out of a proposed guilty plea related to two deadly crashes of 737 MAX jets. The plea reached at the end of the Biden administration would require it to hire a compliance monitor for 3 years. In some circumstances, defendants are arguing that their cases aren't consistent with Trump's foreign policy and criminal justice priorities. Lawyers for Indian billionaire Gautam Adani are asking the Justice Department to drop criminal charges tied to an alleged foreign bribery scheme against him and other executives for his companies, according to people familiar with the matter. The Adani Group has called the allegations baseless. Glencore, a Switzerland-based commodity trading giant that pleaded guilty in 2022 to charges of overseas bribery and market manipulation, got the Justice Department's support this year to end the work of two compliance monitors, which had cost the company $140 million. Part of Glencore's argument, it is an important supplier to the U.S. of cobalt, a rare earth mineral used in jet fighters, munitions, drones, and electric vehicle batteries. Chinese and American companies are in a race to source cobalt, and Trump signed an executive order seeking to make the U.S. the leading producer and processor of non-fuel minerals. Others have claimed to the Justice Department and the White House that they were victims of what the president decries as the weaponization of the justice system. That is one reason the department decided to drop charges against the New York City Mayor Eric Adams over the objections of Manhattan federal prosecutors. The Manhattan U.S. Attorney's Office has traditionally brought many of the government's most headline-grabbing white-collar cases. Its current rift with Washington has called that status into question. Trump has granted clemency to several defendants convicted by the federal prosecutors in Manhattan. In late March, he pardoned Nikola founder Trevor Milton, a Trump donor convicted of defrauding investors by lying about the development of his company's zero-emissions trucks and technology. He also pardoned three founders of the crypto exchange BitMEX, who had pleaded guilty to failing to maintain controls against money laundering. The president pardoned the company too, saving it from a $100 million fine due to be paid the same day. Personnel upheaval. The enforcement retreat is occurring as Bondi and other senior officials clean house at the Justice Department, swapping out and sidelining career supervisors who were responsible for charging crimes such as corruption, price fixing, and securities fraud. The acting head of the department's criminal division was pushed out because, among other reasons, Bondi's top deputies were unhappy with her handling of the Adams case, according to people familiar with the matter. The head of the division's fraud section, which oversees foreign bribery cases, was told via email last month that he was being replaced. Several officials in the Manhattan U.S. Attorney's Office have left or were replaced or were placed on leave in the wake of the Adams rift. Its securities fraud unit was put on hold. Some indictments that are a close call until a permanent U.S. attorney was sworn in, people familiar with the matter said. Federal prosecutors are taking note of Trump's dislike of the overseas bribery law. The newly installed U.S. attorney for New Jersey, Alina Habba, formerly a Trump advisor and one of his defense lawyers, moved to dismiss charges against the former Cognizant executives accused of paying bribes in India. Her decision undercut prosecutors in that office, who had received approval in February before she took over, to proceed to trial, according to an internal Justice Department memo reviewed by the Wall Street Journal. The White House fired a federal prosecutor in Los Angeles who had been overseeing a fraud case against Andrew Wiederhorn, the chief executive of burger chain operator Fat Brands and a donor to Trump and other Republicans. Wiederhorn pleaded not guilty. The prosecutor, Adam Schefter, was terminated after a right-wing activist, Laura Loomer, questioned an anti-Trump tweet he wrote in 2020 when he was a candidate for Congress. Federal prosecutors around the country said in interviews that they are thinking about how to refashion existing cases and investigations to be consistent with Trump priorities. Some U.S. attorneys' offices are considering putting more prosecutors on issues that Bondi thinks need attention, such as cases in which the government was defrauded by contractors. One senior prosecutor said he was looking to direct more resources to fighting fraud against senior citizens. Some foreign bribery prosecutors in Washington, unsure whether they can work on their own investigations, have started working on healthcare fraud probes, according to defense attorneys and other people familiar with the matter. Healthcare fraud, including illegal prescriptions of opioids and Medicare overbilling, appears to be a priority for the Trump administration. Pulling back, the Securities and Exchange Commission also enforces the foreign bribery law. The chief of its Foreign Corrupt Practices Act unit and his deputy director were part of a wave of officials who took a buyout offer intended to slim down the 4,500 employee agency. Acting SEC Chairman Mark Udia said the agency is reviewing how to proceed in FCPA cases and wants to make sure that we're uniformly applying and enforcing the laws. The SEC has also dropped lawsuits against crypto companies Coinbase and Kraken and trading firm Cumberland and DRW. The lawsuits had alleged those companies failed to register with the agency and were operating illegally. The cases were the cornerstone of a Biden administration effort to regulate most cryptocurrencies as securities. The SEC said in a court filing it was pausing a lawsuit against Justin Sun, a Chinese crypto magnate it had accused in March 2023 of market manipulation and fraud. Sun had asked a court to dismiss the claims, saying his firm's trading was legitimate and his activity took place overseas, leaving the SEC without authority over him. A few weeks after Trump was elected, Sun invested $30 million in crypto company World Liberty Financial, owned by the Trump family. The Commodity Futures Trading Commission is scaling back its caseload. Caroline Pham, its acting chairwoman, said last month that the agency had closed a third of open investigations since she took over in January. She added that trading firms had an opportunity to propose settlement offers during a 30-day sprint during which the commission would dispose of more investigations of record-keeping and regulatory reporting violations. Some of the closed investigations had focused on decentralized exchanges, which allow trading and lending of cryptocurrency derivatives through automated software protocols, according to people familiar with the matter. During the Biden administration, some of the CFTC's biggest enforcement actions were against exchanges Binance and BitMEX, which it said illegally offered crypto derivatives to American traders. While the shifting approach to enforcement stands to help white-collar defense lawyers on the current cases, some are getting worried that future work will dry up if the administration fully retreats from foreign bribery investigations and complex Wall Street probes. The bar is very concerned there is going to be a cutback in these kinds of investigations, said Bob Torin, a former prosecutor and retired partner at global law firm Baker & McKenzie. Firms that have a huge litigation practice and devote a lot of resources to internal investigations are going to be impacted. Defending clients enmeshed in overseas bribery investigations has become a lucrative business for lawyers, forensic accountants, and document retention firms. Every major white-collar group is concerned that there will be a significant slowdown, said a partner at another large firm. Another lucrative source of work for lawyers, monitoring corporate compliance with laws that companies admitted to violating, also looks to be in jeopardy. Last month, the Justice Department told compliance monitors assigned to cases handled by the criminal division to pause their work and justify why it should continue, people familiar with the matter said. One exception, cases in which companies admitted compliance breakdowns that allowed drug cartels to launder money. Asian shares gain after Trump's tech exemptions. Chip and electronics stocks drove gains in Japan and South Korea by Kosaka Narioka and Pierre Venkat. Asian stock markets rose Monday after the U.S. exempted some electronics products from tariffs, though President Trump indicated that sector-specific levies may be still on the way. Japan's Nikkei stock average rose 1.2%, South Korea's KOSPI gained 1.0%, and Shanghai Composite Index rose 0.8%. And Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index was 2.4% higher. Among major gainers, iPhone assembler Foxconn Technology Group rose 3.0%, Samsung Electronics added 1.8%, Lenovo Group was up 2.5%, chip testing equipment maker Advantest climbed 4.9%, and electronics maker TDK added 4.4%. Late Friday, the Trump administration announced that smartphones, laptops, and several other electronics products would be exempt from the sweeping tariffs imposed earlier this month, a decision that provides a reprieve for Apple and other companies that manufacture many items in China. However, Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick said Sunday that many tech products would still face separate levies within a month or two. While any tariff rollback may offer near-term relief, the economic drag from existing tariffs will be a key risk to monitor in the months ahead, said IG market strategist Yip John Rung. Recession risks have eased somewhat compared to a month ago, but remain elevated, he said. Uncertainty surrounds Trump's sweeping tariff plans, has affected markets worldwide and prompted some governments to take steps to mitigate the impact on their economies. Chinese President Xi Jinping called for deeper China-Vietnam cooperation in manufacturing and supply chains ahead of his three-nation visit in Southeast Asia this week. Japanese Prime Minister Shigeru Ishiba said Monday that President Trump's trade policy could reshape the global economic landscape, calling for close cooperation among countries facing similar challenges. On Monday, Singapore's central bank eased policy settings as the city-state braced for a sharp economic slowdown amid dimming prospects for global trade and growth. Trump's 90-day pause on so-called reciprocal tariffs for trading partners, excluding China, offered some relief and raised hope for negotiations, though concerns over a protracted trade war with China persisted. Australia's S&P ASX 200 gained 1.3%, and Malaysia's benchmark Kuala Lumpur Composite Index was 1.4% higher. The Indian market was closed for a public holiday. That brings us to the end of today's edition of the Wall Street Journal. I'm Cicely Tiernan, your volunteer broadcaster on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Stay tuned for more interesting programs on Sun Sounds, and please join me again next week.